My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game.
Now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined, as always, by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Oh, it's been an evening. We went out to dinner because my wife made some pizza, and she burnt it in the oven because she forgot to set the timer. So we just said, oh, I guess we're going out for dinner tonight. And then we came home, and the water softener was broken. I had to, like, mop salt and water off the floor of my basement. So that's why I told Mike, I need a couple extra minutes tonight. So, but we're good. Everything's fine. Yeah. I'm here. We're live.
Good, good. Well, you said family emergency. I was like, oh no, did the dog eat something again? Like, I was fearing the worst.
Not this time. No, that was on a show night, wasn't it?
Yeah. That happened like an hour or two before the show.
Oh, that was a very expensive mistake that Astro made. I called that. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm back. I was in California last week for my grandpa's funeral. I did the eulogy. I had to do the flag.
Oh, I didn't know the eulogy.
Dude, wow. I didn't know that till I got there. So I was like, oh, thanks for the heads up. But
They just put you on the spot. They just put you on the spot and said, you're the best speaker in the family. Do the eulogy.
They asked me, it might have been the day before, but it was pretty quickly before it happened. They're like, oh, hey, wait a minute. We need somebody to do this. And they're like, well, you've done these before. You know, you're a good speaker. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And plus, I'm the oldest grandkid, so it's kind of probably my job anyway. But
at my mom's funeral, it's a family tradition in our funeral when we had funerals, is people would get up and they would speak. I don't know if it's kind of, I've been to other funerals where that's not a thing, but growing up, I thought that was a thing.
Yeah, I've seen it both ways, for sure. Yeah,
so same. But I spoke at my mom's funeral because it just felt like I had to, you know? And I remember looking out into the crowd, is such a weird term to use at a funeral, but there's a lot of people there. And I just, man, the open seas of people just bawling. I was like, oh shit, maybe I fucked up. Like, man, I'm glad. I'm sure your grandpa would be glad you would do that for him.
Yeah. And we couldn't get, so it took so long. He died like 6 weeks ago, and we've just been waiting on the VA to get their stuff together and the American Legion to send support for it, for the military honors. And they're like, never mind, we don't do Saturdays. So my cousin and I are both veterans. We did the military honors portion of the funeral too, which I had to train that morning because I've never done it before. So, but I was the one that was in the military like most recent. So, but the funeral went off pretty well, so it was a good ceremony. But I'm glad to be back, glad to be on the show, man. I had an interesting night tonight, and I've had a lot of interesting nights on social media. So earlier, I guess a couple of hours ago, there's this guy on Twitter named Front Row Brian. He's an MMA shitster, bit of a racist, kind of a scumbag, really, if you think about it. He got the Fast Nationals for Collision, and of course they're like really bad from last night. And
it went against Elimination Chamber. Of course it was.
Well, that's why the numbers got released, right? The Fast Nationals, which are never like the real number, usually ends up way higher. Mm-hmm. So WWE released the numbers to him. He's like a friendly, And he put it out. And then I quote tweeted that. And I said, oh, Legentil Behavior is back, right? Just making fun of it. And then I quote tweeted that. And I didn't need to do this, but I did. But
I love
maybe,
this.
I don't know. Maybe I was just trying to be fair. But there was I had an interesting exchange with Dave Meltzer earlier in the week. So, and I'll tell you about that in a little bit. But I quote tweeted and I said, you know, I was like, I can't prove it, but I think AEW does something similar. Right. And I just left it at that. Right. I was like, I think they do something kind of the same. Right. I left it at that. I shit you not. Got a DM like from someone prominent within AEW.
It's the guy we know, the guy we talked about before.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't. I'm not going to say the name. But I got a DM from somebody who works there. And basically said, it's like, Mike, we don't do fast nationals. We don't leak fast nationals. That's not our style. We don't do stuff like that. And I was like, so I replied, I was like, I wasn't saying that you leak fast nationals, but there was some really curious reporting happening earlier in the week. And I thought that maybe your team was behind it, which you guys are in a wrestling war, like fair. And then they just go, no, that wasn't us. Like, we wouldn't do anything like that. I was like, okay. So then I had to like publicly retract it. So, because they believe the person that I was talking to, I trust them, right? They're solid for sure.
If it's who I think it is, it's a solid source.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty solid. So, and the reason why I was even bringing it up, and maybe I shouldn't have, like, chances are I shouldn't have, because there's no real evidence that AEW does stuff like this. I just said it, right? which happens a lot, which I do a lot.
Because you are a shit stirrer, but continue.
Yeah, yeah. So, because earlier in the week when the TNA ratings came out, and I did my weekly tweet about it, and then I did my article about it on Patreon, patreon.com/TheMikeandJDShow. Those articles are free, by the way, because I just like doing them, and they're easy to do, so I just do them. And they had a 0.05 rating in the demo, which has been the same for a few weeks, right? Which is kind of like their new normal. Pretty consistent, right? But the total viewership had dropped a little bit because of the Olympics. So it was like, it went from 254 down to like 230 something. So not like crazy, right? Yeah, yeah. So like for TNA, it's like insane, right? Yeah. So I wrote, I was like, hey, total viewership dropped because people were watching other stuff, but the demo stayed the same. Then Dave Meltzer quote tweets me. He goes, well, actually, and he goes, well, actually, the demo dropped significantly because last week it was 0.054, which was not reported before. It, like, nobody had that number. At least I didn't see it. And this week it's 0.046, but they round the number up. So both weeks are reflected as a 0.05. And I go, Dave, are you correcting me on a difference of 0.009? And he goes, that's a 19% drop. And I was like, and so in my head, AEW gave him that, because then like a couple hours later, he gets the Collision and he is getting the unrounded number, which is favorable to Collision. I was like, okay, he must have gotten this from AEW. But AEW flat out told me they did not get that number from him. But it was like Dave just kind of like, and he did it to me. He publicly corrected. I don't think he talked about it elsewhere. But it was like just to show that there was a drop, and he corrected me the whole thing. So I, of course, I added to my article that Dave said this, and it's very curious that he got that number.
Does Dave have a bugaboo with TNA?
I don't think he, like, everybody's like, yeah, Dave hates TNA. I don't think that's I think he's irritated that he has to talk about TNA because it's such a insignificant thing to his newsletter, and he didn't, you know, just like it, he didn't like the show
ever. Probably.
Like, I would just assume that that's the case. He just doesn't like it. But I don't think he has anything against the company personally. I don't think he doesn't want it to thrive. I think he does. But I think that anytime they get a little bit of success, because there's like a little, maybe a disdain for the product, it's like a natural tick of his to.
Look, I'm a Dave Meltzer defender constantly. I've always taken up Dave's sword. I do think he makes some interesting choices from time to time, but I think the good and the outweighs the bad of the Dave. And I love taking pot shots at TNA. It's part of the fun of our show. And even I'm a little bit like, I don't know about this. This seems a little, because he's tweeted you many times over the past month when it comes to TNA stuff. Like, I'm not on Twitter as much as I used to be, but every time I'm on there, I see Dave quote tweeting you about some silly shit.
Are we back?
I don't know what the hell just happened.
Yeah, dude, we am I lost Mike? Were we both gone, or was it just me?
I might have just been you. I walked out. I refreshed my. I assumed it was me, so I just refreshed. Oh. I don't know.
Okay.
Dan Housen cursed the stream.
Ray J's world. Thank you. That was good.
Thank you.
Okay.
That was good.
We're back.
I was on a tirade, and I don't even remember what the hell I was on a tirade about. I was literally waiting for you to like interject because I had said that I have not been on Twitter lately, and it seems like Dave is constantly retweeting you about something about TNA.
Yeah. He likes to correct me about TNA, but it's in fairness, I have done that to him, but I've done it in his DMs. I have not done that to him publicly, like out of respect, but he's got, I think he has a little bit of a bug. Yeah. I think he has a little bit of a bug up his ass about TNA. Yeah. A bug up his ass about TNA a little bit. Weird. I think, you know, cause like a couple weeks ago when they had like the new ratings measurement had just dropped and they were like 240 something. And like it was a big deal. He went on a show later that night and he said, "Oh, it doesn't mean anything because Google searches were down." We're just like, "What? It's the most viewed show they've had in 8 years. Like, why would you do that?" Like,
it was such a weird thing. And I'm not the TNA defender on this show. Yeah. Like, I thought that was such an odd, like, talk about changing the scoreboard. Like, I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's weird. I think he has a little bit of a buck up his ass about the whole deal. I don't know. Like I don't want to say that about it because I feel like he is like the best journalist that we got, but it does appear to be that way. So that's why I said that. And but I've been corrected. AEW is not feeding Dave bad TNA ratings for sure. Like I completely believe that 100%. So I think if they had a bad one about WWE, they might, but I don't think they're bothering with TNA.
No, I don't think they care. Because that's kind of like AEW can't sell TNA because then they have to acknowledge that they're competition. Kind of like WWE. Like WWE always pretended AEW was in competition, even though they were constantly doing stuff. Like I think Tony's like trying to actually like pretend like TNA is not comp, even though TNA is competition. Like the three steps are very clear, right? Like we have a very clear delineation of the three at the moment.
Right. In the US.
In the US specifically. Yeah. I'm talking US. And each one has like, you know, pretty big gap between them, but I mean, there's a definite big three. It's very much like WWF, Crockett, and AWA in the mid to late 80s. Very much
I was like thinking WWF, WCW, and ECW, like 1999, except for ECW is close to being out of business, and you know, TNA clearly not. So they're doing
at various points in TNA's existence, they've been close to out of business.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get to the chat, and then we're going to get to our first story. Danhausen. We're going to talk about him. So Nicholas Riley said, "Hey guys, hope all is well." So the 3-minute highlight of Danhausen's debut is the only thing from Elimination Chamber I wanted to watch. Dragged a bit long, but it was fun in my opinion. Big Monsters vibes. Yeah, I'm a fan of the Monsters, so count me in on the Monsters. So
I showed, because remember when I took, you remember this, when I took Andy to his first AEW show, he brought a sign with him. Do you remember what the sign is Andy brought to his first AEW show?
I don't remember, no.
It was a Danhausen sign.
Oh, nice.
My kid loved Danhausen. So I saw that on my phone. I showed him the Danhausen debut, and he looked at it, and he goes, "Oh, that guy." And he turned his head and walked away. And I'm like, what? Yeah. I'm like, "What? You love Danhausen?" He's like, and he parlayed some of the internet information that I may have relayed at one point. And I'm like, "Oh my God, I've turned him into me." Like
he's a wrestling snob now.
He is. He's just as bad as his dad. And I'm like, I'm actually like, should we just dig into this right now? It's our cover. Yeah. We should talk about Dan.
Yeah, we will. Hold on. Let me just get to the chat really quick because they've been blowing up. I want to give them their respect.
A lot of Danhausen.
Yeah. Well, it was the cover story. Elimination Chamber was an average show at best, and that Danhausen was an epic fail. I have thoughts on that. Maybe I don't know what JD's thoughts are yet. So we have not talked about this yet. So no. I'm curious. So Ray J said, "I pop for Danhausen. Does not matter what Chicago thought of him." Let's get to a few other people. Let's see Dre in the house. And no hate, but I think companies need to let Danhausen be what he is, an indie talent that sold merch 5 years ago. Punk doing him the favor of his life, putting him in the good word. Yeah. I don't think without Punk. I don't think Danhausen's there for sure. Let's see. Io, our boy Io, said he would rather ROH get a good TV deal. So I think he's talking about Dave. Than TNA, I bet. I don't know if he would rather, but just, I don't know. Just, there is something weird there. I think there's something weird there. Let's see. He's just mad because they're working with the enemy instead of his F buddy. I don't think they've ever had sex, guys. I don't think Dave and Tony have ever done that. I think that's a hefty accusation. So
I don't think he's ever looked at WWE as the enemy. Hey, Mike, what's the only professional wrestling company that Dave Meltzer's ever taken a check from?
WWE.
That would be the WWE.
I know
we get WWF, Worldwide, the World Wrestling Federation. Dave Meltzer was officially a Japanese talent scout for WWF in the 1980s. Yeah. So I know everybody in there is stupid, but I'm here to tell you people that you're stupid. Continue.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people don't know that. And Dave came out with that in the 90s because WWF, Pritchard, I think, threatened to talk about it. And so he just came out with it on his own. But before we get into the Danhausen thing, did you know, JD, that they've already done kind of a behind the scenes documentary on Danhausen's debut?
No, I didn't actually. I haven't seen it.
Well, I have it. We shouldn't get nuked. I think we should be good here. Let's go to X here and let's play the Danhausen.
The next year and a half, tribute. Struggling with his mental health, determined to come back better than before. He's finally offered a role that he believes will get his career back on track.
At some point, he was directed to come out of a big wooden box.
Oh, when a guy comes out of a box, he's instantly over.
This is great.
You have the usual suspects come running in. And what was in the box?
And I was like, it's probably going to be fucking Danhausen, isn't it? And in fact, it was Danhausen.
And we're like, oh my God, if he didn't know he was going to be here. It was like the Munsters. Holy, he's a huge mark.
And he comes out there, he's smaller than anyone on the show, he's smaller than any of his dancers, he's smaller than a good portion of the fans, smaller than all the announcers.
Somehow he thought this was going to work out like he wanted, and the closer that we got, the more obvious it was that it was not.
19,000 people in Chicago, not one of them knew who he was.
I remember thinking to myself, this is terrible. Why did they bring this guy out just to kill him like that?
There's one pathetic little poof of pyro. The lights go out. Everyone boos.
Who edited that?
I don't know, but it was really good.
Well done. Bravo. Yeah. That's impressive.
Okay. Can I give my theory on the Danhausen debut?
Sure.
Okay. I don't want to give WWE credit, but I think we're going to have to on this one. I think they wanted their gobbledygooker moment, and I think they planned it out to be awful. I know you're like, Mike, you're giving them the benefit of the doubt that they purposely made it bad, but I think they wanted it to be like this to get people talking, and Danhausen's a complete joke, and I think they were like, you know, we want to do this. It's not going to get over. It's going to be hilarious. The poof of smoke was on purpose. And then they purposely held the camera shot afterwards when the lights go back out. And then they held on to the booze to get those booze on television. I think they wanted it to be bad because they wanted their gobbledygooker moment. I think that's what this was.
Why?
That's the thing. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't think they wanted it to work. Like, it might end up actually working, but I think they made it bad on purpose. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to steer into, I have my own thoughts, but I'm going to steer into your conspiracy theory for a moment, cause I'm going to have fun with this.
Okay.
I truly believe that Paul Levesque and Phil Brooks still hate each other more than life itself.
I hope that's true.
I think that's 100% true. They're just too different. And in some ways they're too similar. Those guys who are very similar, but they're just different enough in a lot of ways to hate each other.
Right. I think they see wrestling differently, but they have similar personalities and they fight for their vision in a similar way. But Paul has the power right now.
Yeah, not just wrestling, just in everything. Like Paul's hanging out in the Oval Office and Punk still pretends to care about liberal things, even though he doesn't. So I think that I truly think if you are correct, I truly think they signed Danhausen. Made it look like that Tony Khan shipped him there from Jacksonville. Because it looks like that Tony stuck him in a box and mailed him to Triple H to get him out of there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then failed as a fuck you, Phil.
Yeah. So I think you're right, but I don't think it failed completely. I think it's more like, okay, like this is bad television, and like, and people are like, oh, Danhausen doesn't fit what WWE does. Like they had the Boogeyman. Yeah, he 100% does. They had the gobbledygooker. They had all, like, I think that's what this is. I think it's just going to be a spoof the whole time.
It could be. Now, yeah. I give them a lot of credit. I don't think Triple H is that creative, though, to be quite honest with you. No, I think
Triple H is, but Bruce Pritchard has been there forever, and it might be a Bruce Pritchard. This whole thing reeked of Bruce Pritchard.
Yeah, you're kind of right. Yeah. I'm of the mind that I think people are written off Danhausen already.
Yeah,
I don't think so, because he hasn't had a chance to be himself yet. No. I think that if you put Danhausen on TV, all you got to do is give him the microphone and he'll get over it, because he's funny. Like, I do think I saw a quote in the chat saying the stuff was worked 5 years ago on the indies. I think the Danhausen shtick is overplayed. But again, I've been following it since 2020 or whatever. So, I mean, like, I think that I think it's going to be new to the WWE audience if they give it a shot. Now, that being said. No, again, like our buddy, I don't know if we're supposed to say, but we had a buddy who had an idea. He's like, all you do is put him on under the comedy. He goes, oh, you punch him in the groin. Like one of his, like, that was actually a pretty good Danhausen impression. All you had to do is let him just do a couple Danhausen shticks and he would be fine. He would be over with that. Look, that crowd, there's no reason that crowd won't like Danhausen. Like, this is where he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like, he never fit in AEW, ever.
Yeah. Well, when AEW started, they were doing some, like, they were bringing in a lot of the meme wrestlers.
Yeah,
they,
I agree with that. You know what I mean?
They had Michael Nakazawa. They had Orange Cassidy. They were doing a lot of stuff like that. And so they brought in the meme, like, he's the meme wrestler. Like, he popularized the meme wrestler. The problem was is that Orange Cassidy's a really good wrestler and could get over with the gimmick, you know. But Danhausen doesn't do that, and that's fine. I think you can get away with not being a really good wrestler in WWE because they'll just have him pick his spots, and you know, and he will be a babyface that the heels can get heat on, and that CM Punk like avenges, you know, if it is CM Punk, which I think it would be.
No, and I do think this is a CM Punk thing. I do think they'll get a chance to get over. My concern now is, was it so bad to the fact that they just don't do anything else with him? Because like the gobbledygooker. Mm. That was the beginning of the end of old Hector Guerrero in that suit.
Yeah. Well, I think the, back then Vince, and I'm not going to give him any credit, but Vince actually cared what the fans thought.
That's true. That's great.
because he needed them to come to the, like, he didn't have guaranteed money coming in all the time. Right. And they were still growing the company. And he knew it was terrible and laughed it off and then just moved on. I think that WWE will probably try to force feed this thing. I think they're going to give it an opportunity to stick around for a while.
So here's the thing. I think it's going to depend on how that shirt sells.
Yeah.
Because they did put out a shirt. I think if Danhausen sells a bunch of t-shirts, they'll let him on TV. If he doesn't, he'll be on NXT or down to AAA and Evolve.
AAA. I don't think him going to AAA is like the worst idea.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he always did well, you know, doing merch on his own, and then you know, he always sold a lot of other people's merch on the side. he's the merch guy.
That's the thing, like, people like, why do people say fuck Danhausen? Well, you know, he was really over when they signed. They probably signed him at the wrong time, because they signed him in early 2020. They AEW signed him in early 2022, like after they started getting all the really good workers signed.
Yeah.
So if they had signed him in 2019, where strangely enough, he signed with Ring of Honor, the original Ring of Honor, which was that's even a weirder fit than AEW. So I don't think they really knew what to do with them. And then I wrote an article for WrestleJoy about 4 years ago saying that TBS should do like Grandpa Al's Drive-In Theaters, one of my favorite shows as a kid, with Danhausen. I thought that would have been great. Cross synergy with TBS would have been awesome. That clearly never happened. The problem with Danhausen is that politically he made himself a lot of enemies. You know, one that there's the stories that he sold some merch they shouldn't be doing,
which we can't verify that.
Story,
by the way.
Story, that's a rumor. Story,
yeah,
story.
Yeah.
What isn't a story is that you know, he was very clearly during Brawl Out he chose a side, right? Very publicly, you know. And the other thing too is he didn't want to work Collision when Collision became CM Punk's Islet of Misfit Toys. He told Tony Khan that's when he works conventions, is on Saturday.
I'd never heard that story. That's a legit story?
That's a story, yeah.
Okay, I've never heard that before. I didn't know that was a report.
It's like those guys who was on TNA back in the day and wouldn't go to tapings because they had indie dates booked. You know, he makes a lot of money on the convention circuit, and he pretty much made it known he wanted to leave and go to WWE. So Tony left him, let him start for a little bit, which is kind of how he does things. His whole thing is, I'll just pay you to sit at home. And again, we criticized that back in the day, and it's not a great thing, but I have a hard time shedding tears for a guy who does go to all these convention signings, does do all this stuff, and like is making money. I don't know. I mean, I know he'd rather be on TV.
My thing, the only thing I didn't like, you know, because he did want to get out of his deal and go to WWE. He wanted to, you know, go with Punk. The only thing that I didn't like is that Tony extended his contract knowing he wasn't going to use him. I thought that was petty. And if WWE did that, I would be just as furious at WWE, because when all those guys were trying to get out of their deals, when AEW was starting, you know, Brody Lee and FTR and Buddy Murphy and Mustafa Ali, like there's a Andrade, Brian Danielson. All these people trying to get out of their deals, and WWE just kind of froze them out and made them sit in catering. Like we were all against that. You know, so we can't just change our opinions because the three letters of the company change. Like the act is still bad. Again, like I don't have a lot of sympathy for people that get to sit home and make hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like I wish I could, but if they actively ask for their release, I think that after a period of time, you should grant it to them. I think there's like, you know, with very few exceptions.
I struggle with the concept of the independent contractor not being able to independently contract in general. I don't like the idea of people signing to a company not being full-time employees. You know, I also don't love the idea. Here's the thing, is like guys in WDB would go to catering in the hopes that they would work. Like these AEW guys, the guys who the AEW malcontents didn't want to work. You know, they actively, this is between Tony and Vince, is they would say, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, whereas in WWE, they'd fly them out, they'd sit in catering, and they just, you know, because Daddy Vince would be there, they would just wait for their shot. So that's kind of where I'm like, I think in Tony's case, he needed to establish himself as a bit of a dickhead. You have to be a bit of a dickhead to be a boss and let guys like us call you an asshole. And he is an asshole for that move. No doubt. Sometimes you have to be an asshole. And I do find it funny that all the guys at Vince was like, oh, we should just give them some more, are all back in WWE and all doing nothing.
Yeah. Except for Andrade, who's back in AEW and actually having the run of his career.
Isn't that crazy? That's such an amazing, not amazing, great, but just amazingly interesting message that Tony Khan has sent, is you can come back here and I'll push you. I'll push you harder than I did last time. You know, unlike, it's wild. Those guys went back to WWE and Rusev, remember fucking CJ just a couple weeks ago was like, oh yeah, Rusev wanted to wrestle more, so he's back in WWE.
Yeah.
Didn't wrestle a lot.
No. Yeah. And when he does, he usually loses for sure.
Which again, it's pro wrestling. The whole idea is to make money. I mean, if you're going to be that guy, cool. If you'd rather be in the bigger company losing all the time, that is absolutely your prerogative. Zero qualm with that. You're a professional. You are making money any way you see it. Awesome. But I just find that rather interesting. The Danhausen thing, I think he's one of the few guys who I think that if they decide to give him the time, he'll get over. He's gotten over everywhere he's gone. He was super. I have a Danhausen mask behind me right now still, because I do like Danhausen. So, I mean, I think that if they give him time, it'll work. My only thing is this the internet has decided it's a failure. I don't think the boos were as bad as they painted him out to be. The fact that Chicago didn't react to Danhausen when they always reacted to him when he was here for AEW surprises me. Like, because especially a pay-per-view crowd is usually a lot more smarks.
And especially, you know, at the United Center with CM Punk on top, you know, and there's like over, I think there was like 18,000-19,000 people there. Like, it was a huge crowd.
Huge crowd.
Yeah.
I was surprised it had such a negative, negative reaction as it did, to be honest with you. Because we were making jokes about it. We knew it was Danhausen. Yeah. We had a hunch. We didn't know for sure. We all had a hunch it was Danhausen.
I was pretty confident. The person I knew that it wasn't going to be was Jericho. Like, I knew that wasn't happening. Like, he's not coming out of a box. That's not happening.
But we made the joke. We made the Jim Cornette joke that coming out of a box makes you over. Everyone who comes out of a box is over. And it was the exact opposite. Like, Danhausen's the first guy to come out of a box and not get over. Like, it was kind of funny.
Yeah, it totally disproved Jim Cornette's theory that everybody comes out of a box, gets
that's
over.
My, honestly, yeah. this might be a week to listen to the gym. What is it called? The Jim Cornette Experience?
Yeah. I check out the clips on YouTube. I can't, like, his show's too long. I can't sit through everything. So, but if he has a certain topic, I'll take a look at it. So, okay. Now, you know, audience reaction aside, okay, and internet reaction aside, I know you watched it. What did you at least think of the Danhausen debut?
I thought it was a severe underutilization of the man.
I liked everything they did. What I didn't like is what they didn't do is they didn't let him talk and punch somebody in the nuts. Like, that's what I wanted to see.
That's what happened when he debuted in AEW. He didn't talk, but he punched somebody in the nuts. Like, he did a surprise. He came out, did the curse, and then, but like, it's an AEW group and like a fan base, and they knew who he was. So he got like over.
I liked the coffin. I liked the dancing girls, and I liked the song. I'm not proud of it. Yeah, I think the song is, like, you know, very much like Monsters. It's very much Danhausen for sure.
So I got to be honest. I really liked his Ring of Honor music. I thought his Ring of Honor music was really good. I really liked his Ruckus AEW theme and his WWE one. I mean, like, honestly, God, of all the Def Rebel, is that the name of the guy that does the music at WWE now? All his stuff sucks. But this Danhausen one, I kind of liked it. I didn't like it. I just thought it was – I thought Vinny was right about what he said about Danhausen. I thought he looked so JV, you know?
Yeah. Okay, I agree. Yeah. I do agree about that. Yeah.
It just, stuff that works in AEW sometimes. I mean, AEW, like, it embraces its indie roots a lot, and that bothers some people about it. But I think it's part of the charm of AEW.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's wild to me that fucking Powerhouse Hobbs has to change his name, but Danhausen gets to be Danhausen. That's just hilarious.
Yeah.
But, like,
I mean, but you're getting Danhausen for the, like, Danhausen, you want to sell the gimmick. Yeah. You want to sell the,
It's just funny. It's just funny to me. Like, Ricky Starks had to change his name, but like Ethan Page and Danhausen don't. It's just wild.
Jordan Grace and Joe Hendry, who were
very
much smaller profiles when they signed. Like, yeah, they didn't have to either. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
It's not a consistent thing.
Danhausen might have been a bigger name than Jordan. I mean, this is a TNA show, so people are gonna get really mad at me when I say this. Danhausen was probably a bigger name than Jordan Grace.
Well, he was on a show that was actively got more people, but he wasn't on the show very often, and he hasn't been on there in a long time.
But that's part of the thing too. He's a top merch seller. I think that was another thing that Tony did, is I think Tony was getting him in the pocketbook, like, because you know that's how Dan Adams was going to make his money, was with merch. So I think that it's a little extra cold, in my opinion. Like, I don't know, man. I do find the whole thing funny. I think the presentation was gobbledygook. I suddenly saw it was the Shockmaster. I don't know if it was that bad.
No, because, like, Shockmaster was meant to be good. Like, when Dusty Rhodes wrote that and presented it, and like they thought it was gonna get over. With gobbledygook,
I don't believe they thought it was gonna get over. They took a stormtrooper helmet and covered it in glitter. There's no way they thought that was gonna work. They were doing 1993.
Dude, they were doing a bunch of hokey shit in 93.
Like, they sure were.
They were. Same era. I mean, wasn't there like a little person? I know we can't say the M word, like, that blew up a boat trying to kill Davey Boy and
Mike,
Sting?
Mike, that was 1 month earlier.
Okay. Yeah. So, like, they thought that was getting over, right? Like, So the Shockmaster was meant to be good, and it wasn't. So Gobbledygooker was meant to be, they wanted to do the chicken from the baseball, which
San Diego chicken.
The San Diego chicken. And because it was getting over with kids at the baseball stadiums. So that's what they were doing. They knew it wasn't going to be liked by adults, but they're trying to get kids. So in the sense, they knew it was going to be like hokey and bad, but they was going for kids. Danhausen, I think they knew that it was going to get shit on, and they were just trying to have their gooker moment. I could be wrong. And maybe everybody could shit on the theory.
But I love the conspiracy theory. I just don't think Triple H is that smart. I also don't know. I don't know where they go from here with him. I'm super curious to see what happens. You know what was a great moment actually, when Pete Rose dressed as the San Diego chicken and got
that was good.
That was actually pretty great. Now that I look back on it.
Yeah, that was good. Oh, I got a question for you that we'll save towards the end. But I don't think that you and I are going to debate this question. Actually, I'm just going to tell you now because I'll forget. Okay, right. I got into it with some people on Twitter this week.
Get out of here!
Yeah, go figure. Where do you stand, Kane or Abyss?
As a character, or as a worker.
character, worker, the whole total package. Who do you prefer, Kane or Abyss?
I like Abyss.
Okay, yeah. I don't even think it's close.
Yeah, me too.
I don't even think it's close.
Can I be honest with you? Kane is just... Kane is Poochie Undertaker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, like I liked... So I dug... In 98, I dug the backstory of Kane. I loved... I was also 14.
I was 18, so I thought it was corny.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I thought it was like, I thought it was cinema. I was, you know, fucking 14, right? I didn't know my ass from elbow, but when I go back and look at it now, I still like it because that reminds me of like 14-year-old me. But I never thought that he was any good. I just never thought that he was like a great wrestler. I never thought that he was a great promo. I just thought he was a cool character for sure. But so I liked everything about Abyss.
I always thought he was more jacked than The Undertaker. So I respected that. He was more muscly. People rave about Kane forever, and I've never got it. I never like thought like it's a retread character. Like it just never. It's like being a fan of comics thing. It's like really liking Jason Todd Robin to me, and I'm like, why would I like the other guy? I never. No, like Abyss was cool. Like Abyss had his like was very Foley-esque, but Abyss was his own thing. I always liked Abyss and every variation of Abyss.
Yeah. Yeah, there were some Abyss matches that I didn't like, but I don't think it was his fault. I think he was just being put in a really bad position because of like who was booking TNA. But I think like as a character, as a promo, and as a wrestler, I thought he clears Kane easy. But that became a whole debate online. So okay, I just want to know where you stood.
No, I'm Abyss guy. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now let's get into the JD Oliva portion of the show. We're going to talk about probably the biggest news of the week, which has some impact on pro wrestling. Paramount, much to the chagrin of a lot of people, except for AEW, I think. I think this is going to be a good thing for AEW, but Paramount has won the bid for WBD. Netflix has dropped their bid, and it looks like they're expecting it to close. If it doesn't close, then WBD gets like $7 billion, but it's expected to close in the third quarter of 2026. It's looking promising at this point.
So, it's interesting. This group is going to be $100 billion in debt.
Yeah.
When this thing is set, that's like, there's no way they're going to make that money. Right. No. So again, when something like this happens, my immediate thought is they're going to look to sell it as soon as possible. Now I know the difference is this is going to be little Ellison. Veruca Ellison is like calling. This is his toy. The Ellisons want CNN, right? That's why Netflix wanted Warner Brothers. Ellison's wanted Warner, right? They want DC. They want CNN especially. There's a lot to this that I'm not sure about. There was some leaked audio. Again, I was all laughing about this because they had lost, but they kept looking for more and more money. And then I think a problem that we're not talking about enough is that there was enough blowback from Capitol Hill that it kind of pushed Netflix away, and it reinvigorated the Paramount bid because the vibe coming through was that the administration would not allow that bid to go through.
They had Susan Rice on their board, and that was like a negative mark on them. And the Ellisons are big donors to both Trump and to the IDF, which are currently waging a regime change war without any congressional oversight. Anyway, go ahead, JD.
You ain't wrong. That's another topic of conversation. So, this merger is just as big and just as bad as a Netflix one, right? Because you've essentially killed one of the legacy studios in Hollywood. Paramount has been struggling for a long time, and the Ellisons bought Paramount and realized they don't have anything great. But with Warner, they could have something. So now Warner and they're going to, according to them, they're going to keep Warner and Paramount separate and release films under those banners. Not uncommon. Disney's been done that for decades, right? They did that with Touchstone in the 80s. They did that with Miramax in the 90s. They did that. they do that continuously. So not uncommon. The running the studio is a lot harder than they think.
Yeah.
I don't have faith that they can run the one, let alone the other. Three, there was leak. The investor call leak, because not all the investors of WBD are thrilled with this, right? No one in Hollywood likes this. Everybody on the Warner side is super disappointed that this happened. The only people that are happy are the top they can get their money, the top investors. Ellison said, we don't know what's going to happen with this deal.
Zaslav said it.
Zaslav, I'm sorry. This is Zaslav, David Zaslav. His exact words were, we don't know what's going to happen. It's going to take 6 to 12 months to close this deal. And if it doesn't work, we're going to get $7 billion.
Yeah.
And that is not something you say to your investors if you are 100% confident of regime change.
Yeah. Well, that is not what make, should we make regime change jokes right now? Like too early?
I guess not. I don't think I was making a joke on that, but no. I mean, leadership change, we'll say. I probably had regime change in my head because of all, you know, leadership change. That is not what they said when the Netflix deal was set. They were not, Zaslav did not say, you know, let's take our time on this. This might not work. He was very up and right away, like, yep, we're going to go to work Netflix. It's going to be great. Everyone's going to do this, blah, 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 blah. He was very bullish on the initial outbreak. I think that they're not 100% sold that Paramount's money is real.
Yeah.
You know, that's a reason. That is a major reason why they declined the offers the first time. They came at him with a huge offer now, and Netflix, I think, would have come through with more money if they thought the merger would go through. I think Netflix got the deal, got the hint that the Trump administration wasn't going to, which I said months ago on this show that we got to see if the Trump administration allows this to happen. There's already been talk in certain circles that if certain people are in power in 2028, it'd be time to break up monopolies again. I don't know if that's real, but there's a lot of rabble rousing in that, especially in California.
Yeah.
California still being the hub of the film market is not thrilled that one, because it's less opportunity for work.
Yeah.
Right. Because you can say it's two studios, but it's one studio. So that's less jobs. So immediately, and this, there's a good chance that this one doesn't go through either. There could be a lot of scrutiny. Like people say, oh, it's a slam dunk. I give you Sinclair WGN. That did not happen. That failed. And we will see where the world is at in 6 months because things change quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Things change. I think, you know, right now with the administration that we do have and them having close ties with the Ellison family, I would say that like the administration's not going to be the roadblock. I don't think, you know, they might be able to get enough people to fight it, but I just don't think they will. Now so let's just say that it goes through. What is the effect on AEW? My opinion is that this is better news for AEW because they probably would have lost their streaming deal had Netflix absorbed HBO Max. But now that it looks like that HBO Max would go into Paramount, and now it's going to be in front of even more eyeballs. And I don't think that Paramount's going to cancel the thing. I think they're going to keep it.
Not a Paramount. People say, well, Paramount shows UFC. UFC and
so
it's not a competitor to professional wrestling. In Paramount, the Ellisons are one thing, but they're not in bed with TKO. It's sort of like that they're like this, like they do business together. But I mean, TKO's they got their tentacles everywhere. So I mean, they can't enforce saying you have to cut it. So it's probably and Tony's a billionaire too, so he probably knows all these people. So like, it's probably better.
JD, who has more power, the Ellisons or TKO?
Oh, the Ellisons.
Right, so TKO has no leverage over the Ellison family. So TKO is not going to go to Ellison and say, "Hey, I need you to cancel this little wrestling show that does, you know, whatever 700,000 a week because it offends us." That's not going to happen.
No, and nor will they do that because it'll hurt their leverage. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure how long this guy. I did this before. I did earlier in the show a couple months ago. I did like the lineage change of Warner Brothers. Like Warner Brothers has been sold so many times over the course of my lifetime, let alone before then. Like, need I remind you of AOL Time Warner, right? There was Time Warner when Time Magazine bought Warner. At one point, Warner Brothers was owned by a freaking parking lot company. Like, these things happen. Like, these studios get sold. $100 billion. I don't foresee them not selling, like not breaking this thing off and selling chunks of it.
Yeah.
I know that Ellison really wants his AI movies. Like the idea of an AI Superman movie horrifies me beyond all rational thought. I don't know what's going to happen with the Warner side, but I find it to be much more destructive from the film and cable news standpoint like the reality is they want CNN so they can have like they're doing what they can do with CBS, right? They're going to have their own right wing version of it. The problem is all the right wing folks already watch Fox, and the hardcore ones already watch Newsmax.
Yeah, the boomers are already set, and they've been told for 40 years that CNN is unwatchable, so they're not going to watch it even if somebody new buys it.
I think it's going to want because CBS News is already losing. They're already losing their, you know, like 60 Minutes doesn't get the ratings that it used to. So I mean, all you're really doing is you're going to push those middle of the road viewers somewhere else. Yeah. And, you know, people who lean left are going to watch MSNBC anyway. And people our age don't watch cable news. No. So, I mean, like, you're fighting for the baby boomers, right? And some older generation X people. Like, reality, it's going to, someone else is going to create a network at some point, like just like Murdoch did when he decided to create Fox. Someone's going to do something because this is now there's if this happens to CNN, there's a spot in the market. I did hear someone rabble rousing they're going to try to make a bid for something else. I don't know. I don't know if that's reality or not, but like I don't foresee this conglomeration working long term, mainly because these things don't work long term. Remember, we had our show when Warner Brother Discovery became a thing when Zaslav took control. We talked about that when it happened in 2021. So, like, these things are so impermanent now that I think we can get upset about it. But at the same time, I don't know how long it's going to last. I don't foresee, like, these billionaires aren't really known for investing in things long term. You know, I don't know. I think it's good for AEW for right now because I think they're going to have their home. There's no reason for them to leave. And if anything happens to them, I do think Amazon is waiting in the wings.
Yeah. Same here. I think they're going to be just fine. I don't really see this being a major concern of theirs. And I think the Khans and the Ellisons, I'm sure they've met, right?
Oh,
like,
I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm sure they got yachts parked next to each other at some point.
Like, and that's the thing. Sometimes people like forget that AEW is also owned by a mega powerful billionaire.
That owns the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know?
Yeah, to own an NFL team, you have to have like real money. And Ellison's is tech money, and tech money is scary because like we see tech money go away fast. You know, like we lived through the dot-com burst of our early 20s. The AI bubble will pop soon. Mm-hmm. You know, there's already we won't get into the whole thing, you know, with going on about and stuff like that.
But I mean,
like,
Anthropic, yeah.
Yeah, Anthropic. That's not it. But I mean, like, I do feel that AI, because remember the Super Bowl had a ton of AI commercials this year. It reminded me of watching Super Bowl in 2000 when they had a shit ton of .com commercials.
Yeah. Or in 2021, I think it was, it was all crypto commercials.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And the crypto market burst. Right. Yeah. And people the crypto bros don't want to hear that, but that happened. So, I mean, like, I do think the AI bubble, I mean, AI is here. It's here to stay. Like it's here. It's a thing. We have to learn to live with it. I don't think it's going to be quite what it is right now, the Wild West, right? Because these Wild West situations don't last forever because it becomes harder for people to make money.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see. The Heat is on, says, in my opinion, all depends on what they want TNT, TBS as a station to be in the future. Losing the NBA was a bad move for those stations.
No,
it
wasn't.
I think they're doing fine still. I think, you know, we'll see. NBC and Peacock have the NBA now, and everything's been pushed kind of to ESPN and NBC. But I don't know if are those stations doing bad now.
No, I mean, they're not what they were ratings wise, but that wasn't ever about that. It was about making an attractive offer so it can be bought, right? Yeah. And it was cheaper. Now they've got, now granted, they spent a shit ton of money, but they would have had to spend even more if they had those NBA contracts.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been an even higher price. But I guess technically the Ellisons own a piece of AEW. That's interesting. Well, once it goes through. But
still a lot to happen.
Yeah, still a lot to happen. All right, we got a couple of topics left. And if you guys got a topic in the chat, just let us know. Alan Jones, AJ Styles.
I know that guy.
Yeah, he retired completely. Like he's actually, he's like legit retired. They did the whole retirement ceremony on Monday. And he come out on the Good Brothers podcast and said, he acknowledged that there was an offer on the table for AEW. And he just was like, no, I'm done. My body hurts. And I want to spend more time with my kids. And I'm like, you know what? Good for you, AJ. Good for him. What are your thoughts on AJ retiring?
Oh, I'm bummed. But at the same time, he had been slowing down. Like he's in his late 40s right now. So, would I love to see him wrestle Will Ospreay? Absolutely. Yeah. Do I think AEW needs AJ Styles? No. No. Am I happy that AJ went out the way he did and gets, because he's always said he wanted to retire and work for WWE. I think I think people who like our shows have fonder memories of AJ and TNA than AJ has memories of being in TNA. Yeah. You know, yeah. I think it means something more to the fans than it does to AJ. So I think that, I think he feels this. I think that since the moment he signed with WWE, he's felt a sense of job security.
Yeah.
And like safety, something he probably never really felt in his career. So I think that, you know, when you struggle as a young family man, because he had kids young and in professional wrestling, I think that it feels good for him to know he has a job. And he's never been, you know, he's been highly welcomed since the day he walked into that company. They have always treated AJ pretty good. So
Yeah. Good for him. I did think that, you know, AEW is absolutely a possibility, and that it would, like, Tony Khan would offer him so much money he wouldn't be able to turn it down, but he is able to. And I was talking to a guy a couple weeks ago about it, and I said the thing about AJ is he's like uniquely loyal. He would not have left TNA had Dixie Carter not offered him half of what he was worth. Right? If the offer was the same, he would have stayed.
But as a father with four kids.
Yeah. But Dixie made him like a lowball offer. Now, in her defense, the company didn't have any more money. Like, they'd lost their Spike TV deal, and so they couldn't pay people. But had they paid him the same amount of money that he was used to, he probably would have stayed there. He didn't. So he ended up going to New Japan, and that ended up being the best thing to ever happen to him. And then he got his WWE deal, and had a really great career in the WWE, multiple time champion. I got to see him live a couple of times with the WWE. Yeah, so he's great, and it looks like he signed a new deal. He's going to be doing some like coaching for them, I guess. I don't know if he's going to be full time coach or whatever, but I think he's going to be going back and forth to NXT every now and then, just helping out. So
I think that's a good move for AJ. I think that you said he's a crazy loyal guy. He's like kind of old school in that regard. You know, old school Southern guy. You know, for better or for worse. So he's going to be very loyal. Like AJ's, you know, what you see with AJ is what you get. You know, AJ Styles is like exactly who you think he is. So like he's gonna take care of those people, and he'll be a good trooper for the rest of his life there. And he's never really he flirted with. I think he always knew AEW was a great leverage point because he's smarter, or he has agents that are smarter than we are led on to believe with him. But remember, AJ was gonna be on that first Dynamite. We thought AJ was gonna jump soon. So you know, AJ knows his worth. And that was all because of his Ring of Honor New Japan gamble that paid off massively. So you know what? And I'm sure in his heart, Tony Khan is happy that he got AJ one last nice contract to be retired. Because WWE signed him to a contract to keep him at home.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for him. That's the best contract to have.
Absolutely.
Should that be what you want? I was hoping I'm going to be in Atlanta on Friday. So if you're a TNA fan and you're at the Atlanta tapings, come say hi. I'll be there probably wearing this exact same t-shirt. It's my new Injustice for All t-shirt. I got it last week. I was a little bit bored and made my way into Tilly's and got me a new Metallica shirt. So, but I will be there in Atlanta. So everybody come say hi. I don't know where I'm going to be sitting. I somehow finagled my way to get tickets to that show, and I got to drive 4 hours and do the whole thing. I'm taking the day. Well, I have vacation time that I never used that if I don't use, I lose. So I just have like a free day. So I'm just going to go down to Atlanta and check out the tapings on Friday. So if people are down there, come say hi. I mean, I was hoping that AJ would stop by, but I probably not going to happen now.
No. I know we were kind of like thinking there might be another AJ. A couple appearances in TNA, but we were hoping to have some matches. It was kind of cool they brought Frankie and Abyss, actually Abyss, in on the show.
Yeah.
That was awesome. So I think he's probably done. I believe him.
Yep, I believe him too. But anyway, guys, we're past 11 o'clock. We did get a little bit of a late start, so we didn't get to the full hour this week, but I think we're going to go ahead and close it because Uncle Mike has to go to bed. I'm pretty tired. So that's going to do it for us this week on the Mike and JD Show. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-made, no rain, from the track when we unite and spit, this is an A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-made, no rain.
Not a bit.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.